DirecTV, perhaps to be soon part of the AT&T universe. Chinese hackers, surveillance reform, a tough week for eBay, and whatever happened to patent reform. That's not all, but it's a start. Welcome back to 40ANM in 5, the weekly download of 40ANM LLC. It's Tuesday, May 27th, and I'm Chris Bohm. If you were here in the U.S. yesterday, I hope you enjoyed a safe and restful holiday weekend. First up, early last week, we all learned about AT&T's bid for satellite TV provider DirecTV. The proposed deal would be worth $48.5 billion, giving DirecTV shareholders $95 per share, $28.50 of it in cash, the rest in AT&T stock. In a statement, AT&T Chairman Randall Stephenson called the deal a unique opportunity that will redefine the video entertainment industry and create a company able to offer new bundles and deliver content to consumers across multiple screens, mobile devices, TVs, laptops, cars, and even airplanes. DirecTV has had strategic deals with service providers in the past to add a competitive broadband component to its TV service in order to make it more attractive. But this deal would presumably cement that relationship with AT&T. The permanence of a combined voice, internet, and TV service bundle would certainly benefit DirecTV. AT&T's U-verse is its own fiber-to-the-curb TV, internet, and digital voice bundle. But it's unclear as yet where DirecTV coverage might be used simply to supplement this coverage for purposes of a bundle, or remain a competitor where there is a market overlap. The proposed deal must be reviewed by U.S. regulators, including the FCC and the Justice Department. DirecTV has 40 million digital TV customers in the U.S. and Latin America. The U.S. House-authored surveillance reform package entitled the U.S. Freedom Act passed the House of Representatives on Friday this past week by a wide bipartisan margin. The bill bars the NSA from collecting all U.S. call data into a database, as they presently have, but instead directs the agency to ask for records from the phone companies if the records are related to an agent of a foreign power. Officials have commented in the past 2 weeks that the revised bill protects the privacy of U.S. citizens while still preserving the intelligence community's ability to detect terrorist attacks. But changes that have been developed among the many parties to the legislation, including the House committees and leadership and with the administration, have been criticized by some, including the original Patriot Act author, Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin. The criticism is that the bill's authors have reintroduced ambiguity into the bill by leaving open the possibility that dragnet-style collection and retention of data can happen. Tech companies, including Yahoo, AOL, Apple, Microsoft, Twitter, and LinkedIn, in a loose coalition known as Reform Government Surveillance, have urged Congress to close any loopholes in order to ensure meaningful reform. The bill's proponents have sharply rejected that interpretation, saying that there is no ambiguity, adding that legislative voices in support of the measure will make plain, concurrent with its passage, that there is no intention for the measure to have a truck driven through it by potentially overbroad interpretation, as many claimed occurred under Patriot Act authority. Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, and chairman of the Judiciary Committee, said this past week that he was glad that the House was poised to act, but that he remains concerned that some important provisions were removed. The expectation, according to the Washington Post, is that the eagerly anticipated legislation would be adopted and potentially on the president's desk for signature before July 4th. Meanwhile, Cisco chairman John Chambers added his own voice to the call for surveillance reforms in a letter to President Obama this past week. The letter comes after documents leaked by Edward Snowden indicate that the NSA may have used Cisco hardware to help it gather information on potential targets. The BBC reported this past week that pictures had circulated online of NSA staff reportedly opening crates containing Cisco gear, which the NSA is believed to have altered so as to ease agency interception of target data. In calling for action, Chairman Chambers said that we simply cannot operate this way, as our customers trust us to be able to deliver to their doorsteps products that meet the highest standards of integrity and security. In related news, according to TechDirt.com, the House Science and Technology Committee adopted an amendment last week to the FIRST Act for Frontiers in Innovation, Research, Science, and Technology, stating that the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, no longer has to consult with the NSA on encryption standards. You may recall the controversy that began back in September 2013 when it was learned that the NSA may have hijacked certain encryption standards processes and product releases in order to introduce potential faults or interception backdoors into the technology. And for those who may have thought that the continuing swirl of surveillance-related leaks and allegations might have been bad for tech innovation, you need look no further than Ross Perot Jr. and Cain Capital this past week, who, according to several sources, have collectively invested $30 million in Silent Circle, the Maryland-based mobile security company helping to develop what it calls the Blackphone smartphone, among other encrypted products. In an indictment filed this past week in the Western District of Pennsylvania, U.S. federal authorities have charged five Chinese Army officers with hacking into American private sector companies in a seeming play for competitive advantage. The court action, the first cyber espionage case of its kind, name Wang Dong, Sun Qi Liang, Wen Zhenyu, Wang Zhenyu, and Gu Chunhui, all officers in Unit 61398 of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. In announcing the action, Attorney General Eric Holder said that the charges represent the first-ever charges against known state actors infiltrating U.S. commercial targets by cyber means. Assistant Attorney General for National Security John Carlin, in his remarks, noted that the hacking occurred from 2006 through 2014, causing significant losses for the companies involved. In particular, he noted SolarWorld, a maker of solar panels and accessories, was rapidly losing market share to Chinese competitors that were pricing exports well below cost at the very time when hackers were stealing cost, pricing, and strategy documents from SolarWind computers. In reaction, according to the Telegraph, the Chinese accused the U.S. of hypocrisy, citing what it called the U.S. double standard from WikiLeaks through the Snowden affairs, and threatened retaliation over hacking charges against the five officers. On Tuesday, according to the Telegraph, the U.S. ambassador to China, Max Baucus, was summoned by Chinese officials for talks and receipt of angry denials. According to Attorney General Holder, the alleged victims were identified as Westinghouse Electric, U.S. Steel, Alcoa Inc., Allegheny Technologies, SolarWorld, and the U.S. Steelworkers Union. It was widely reported this past week that eBay was the target of a cyber attack. Hackers had apparently accessed a database of encrypted passwords as well as other data, including email addresses, physical addresses, phone numbers, and date of birth. According to eBay, there hasn't been a sign of fraudulent activity since the problem was first detected, reportedly about 2 weeks ago. eBay added that its customer financial data and purchase records are stored in different places from where the information incursion took place, and also that accounts of its PayPal payment subsidiary were not impacted. Apart from the time it took to report the data breach, another source of criticism has come this week over the time it took to discover that it had occurred, according to NPR, between late February and early March. The access to the accounts was apparently gained through a small number of employee login credentials, and according to eBay's initial release, they are working with law enforcement and security experts to investigate the breach. According to the BBC, there has been widespread criticism from the security industry, with many asking why this data was not encrypted. For although not specifically financial or health-related, each of the data elements breached and stolen is among the core group of information about a consumer necessary to build a fraudulent profile for ID theft or other crimes. As of Monday morning, Forbes Online was reporting that California, Connecticut, Florida, and Illinois had begun looking into the breach at the online auction site. Most who track Federal Reserve policy decisions have for some time expected that the Fed would raise short-term interest rates sometime between the latter half of 2015, given the present pace of growth. The Fed has kept its target rate at 0% since 2008, when it cut rates in an effort to stimulate the economy in the wake of the Great Recession. This past week, the released minutes of the Fed's Open Market Committee seem to indicate that they are thinking about it, even if no decision has been made as yet as to when. And the minutes themselves emphasize caution with regard to any interpretation of what they did or didn't say. The committee's discussion of the topic was undertaken as part of a prudent planning, and it did not imply that normalization of rates would necessarily begin sometime soon, according to the minutes. Under both Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke and present Chair Janet Yellen, the Fed had begun scaling back its quantitative easing, the monthly bond buying program instituted after the recession began, in an effort to keep long-term rates low and encourage spending. Since it began cutting back on the strategy, monthly purchases of U.S. bonds by the Fed have decreased from a high of $85 billion to roughly $45 billion per month. This past week, Fed Chair Janet Yellen addressed graduating seniors and their families and friends at New York University, where she underscored that finding the right path in life, more often than not, involves some missteps. She added that her Federal Reserve colleagues and I experienced this as we struggled to address a crisis that threatened our global economy. But she also praised her predecessor, Ben Bernanke's grit, as she called it, in the face of tough decisions made during the financial crisis. Both Politico and the Washington Post reported this past week on what seemed to have been a last-minute push in the U.S. Senate to thwart patent reform. As late as this past Wednesday morning, a legislative proposal intending to curb the so-called practice of patent trolling had seemingly reached a bipartisan compromise on key language, so much so that the bill's two top advocates, Republican John Cornyn of Texas and Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, were both flabbergasted when the legislation was put on indefinite hold by Judiciary Chairman Senator Patrick Leahy, Vermont. According to both the Post and Politico, the legislation was put on hold after Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada intervened at the last minute. As reported by the Washington Post's Brian Fung, Senator Cornyn remarked that this is the third time in 3 weeks that the Majority Leader has blocked legislation with bipartisan support in the Senate. The legislation was aimed at curtailing a practice whereby patent holders would file frivolous lawsuits in order to potentially extort large settlement payments rather than the defendants deciding to risk litigation. Under the bill's terms, new requirements would have made it easier for the filers of such lawsuits to be required to pay litigation costs if they lost. Many are by now familiar with a viral video posted to YouTube that depicts a number of Iranian 20-somethings dancing on the streets and rooftops of Tehran to Pharrell Williams' hit song Happy. The three men and three unveiled women were arrested shortly after the video went viral, but several news outlets have reported this past week that they have been freed. According to the BBC, the International Campaign for Human Rights, or ICHRI, reported that the participants had been freed, but that the director of the video still remains held. Pharrell Williams, whose song was used in the film Despicable Me 2, and which was nominated for an Oscar earlier this year, had said that it was beyond sad that these kids had been arrested for trying simply to spread happiness. Police had initially called the video vulgar and that it hurt public chastity, and some media outlets claim that the group was released only after posting apologies and other statements distancing themselves from the posted video. According to the BBC, under Iran's interpretation of Islamic law, women must cover their hair and wear loose-fitting clothes meant to preserve modesty, which is where the video may have run afoul of Iranian authorities, if only for a brief period. Numerous news outlets reported on the sad passing this past week of Gordon Willis, the U.S. cinematographer responsible for the stunning imagery behind such classics as The Godfather series, All the President's Men, Annie Hall, and Clute. As reported on Monday by NPR's Alan Greenblatt, Gordon Willis had established a kind of noir color look, rich in brown, amber, and shadow, that was a vital force in the noir movies made in Hollywood in the 1970s. Gordon Willis had won an Academy Award in 2009, but it was honorary, as he never did receive the Cinematography Prize for any of his American classics that had made him a true giant among his peers, including the similarly lauded Caleb Deschanel. According to NPR, Willis said shortly after his last film, The Devil's Own, in 1997, that he retired because he was tired of trying to get actors out of their trailers and standing in the rain. Mr. Willis was 82 years old. And that is all we have for you this week. You have been listening to 40 AM in 5. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's download were reported by at least two online or print news sources, or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from the BBC, the Washington Post, TechDirt.com, The Telegraph, National Public Radio, Forbes Online, and the FederalReserve.gov. Thank you for listening. 40 AM and 5 will be back with you again on Monday, June 2nd, after a short week for us, given the Memorial Day holiday. Until then, make this week and every week one to remember. And bye for now.